This is The Topic is Trek, Episode 9, for Wednesday, November 15th, 2017. Working in a coal mine. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already!
I don't remember that bell in there before. Well, anyway.
Right. It was in the George Lucas second edition.
Ah. Undinged first. Anyway, hello, everyone. I'm one of your co-hosts, Clinton Allvord, and beaming in to join me, as always, are Chuck Tomasi.
Hello, hello.
And Mr. Craig Stepp.
Hola, hola.
Oh, I need to get the universal translator out.
Hey, by the way, when you said the title of the show, I somehow missed it until you read it out. And I was like, the first thing I thought of was that song, Working in a Coal Mine.
See that little wordplay there.
Coal. I got you.
The whole song started coming in my head. I was like, oh, boy. That's funny.
Well, since we have no budget to play music, we won't be doing that.
Or comedy.
Yeah, we have less of a budget for that, as I'm sure any one of our regular listeners can tell you.
That's funny, because that was kind of a topic on After Trek.
Comedy?
No.
Coal mines?
Yes and yes. No. Matt.
Oh, that's right. The karaoke.
The karaoke songs, yeah. Yeah.
Ooh, no Klingon budget. Karaoke. We could do that.
All right.
I am CA.
Humans. Suddenly it's a Ferengi Klingon. I don't know what's going on there. But enough of that. Why don't we open up subspace chatter?
One of these buttons.
Yeah, that last one.
Press them all, see what they do.
It was that last
one. Peace or nothing.
Hey, by the way, when I got those sound effects, the Star Trek sound effects long time ago, I strung them all together on separate tracks, so it sounded like somebody was just hitting all the buttons on the bridge.
Yeah. You mean like this?
Dee Dee, please leave the bridge. Dee Dee, please leave the bridge.
Dee Dee.
Dee Dee, get out of my starship.
Don't press those buttons, Dee Dee.
Get off the bridge.
Poor listeners.
Okay, I'll show
you. All right, let's move on to our first story, which is from The Verge, and it's something that I think a lot of us knew by now, but just in case, it's announced that CBS will air Star Trek Discovery's last episode in 2017, Into the Forest I Go, on Sunday, November 12th. And we've presumably all seen that because there'll be spoilers ahead, people.
Yes.
Oh, wait, okay.
Spoiler alert.
I can stay on top of this. If all I have to do is push buttons.
Edie to the bridge. After it airs.
Lieutenant Edie.
Fans will have to wait until the new year to see what happens next. Fortunately, the hiatus won't be that long. The show will return on January 7th.
Oh, okay. This is the first I got an actual date, because when they signed off of the episode, it just said, coming back in January 2018.
Right. So set roughly a decade before the original Star Trek series, Star Trek Discovery follows a disgraced Starfleet officer named Michael Burnham. When war breaks out between the Federation and Klingons, which apparently she started, they missed that point there, she's assigned to serve on the USS Discovery, where she's tasked with helping the ship and crew bring the war to a conclusion. When the network announced the series' September release date, it revealed that the first season would be split into two chapters. The second chapter, although they didn't air quote it, the second chapter will begin with the show's 10th episode, Despite Yourself. Chapter 2 will contain the season's remaining 6 episodes and will run through February 11th. According to CBS, the show will apparently find the crew of the USS Discovery in, again with quotes, unfamiliar territory.
Where they run across a Voyager.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they'll have to get creative about ways to return home. Or they run into the crew of the Jupiter 2. In this week's episode, the crew came face to face with the Klingon Empire over the planet Pavo.
Chekhov.
After the planet. Yeah. Not
Pavo. Pavo Chekhov.
Pavo. It's on the pronunciation. Pavo. After the planet's native species summoned them, hoping to resolve their conflict. And mission well accomplished there, apparently. So that's the word. We'll only have to wait a few weeks till January 7th, and then we get more Star Trek for 6 weeks, and then we wait for goodness knows how long after that.
Wait for the space groundhog to see a shadow.
Exactly.
I thought it was a Klingon world because they could have called it Pa-Vo.
We can just put a little apostrophe in there and some of the letters, and yeah, that'd be great. All right, well, let's move on to our second story, and that comes to us from Craig.
That's right.
He wrote the whole thing. From,
yes. That's right, from Roddenberry. Under
a pseudonym.
Yeah, it was tiring, but I did it. So I've been on a mission myself to get a new, I want a clicky keyboard. And I've been looking around for different types. There's the cherry red and the cherry brown different switches that you can get. Remember, you both had, I'm sure, the IBM clicky keyboards at some point.
Oh, absolutely.
Several of them.
I still have one. I'm using one, right? Well, not an IBM one, but I still love a very clicky raised key keyboard.
Yeah. So over at Roddenberry, Roddenberry.com, they have a key set that you can put, you can replace your keys on a clickable keyboard. So you have to have your own keyboard, of course. You can buy all over the place with a certain configuration, of course. And when I was being mean, like the tab and the back switch, you know, you want some of those buttons in the same size, but you can buy the entire key set, and it's made after the Elcar's, interface, where the colors are like the number key is yellowish. Then you got the tab and whatnot, purple on the left-hand side. Anyway, you can go look at them. There's a mix of yellow and blue and purple. It's really cool. And I thought, does it really want this? They're not exactly cheap,
right,
per se, but neat.
How much is it?
It was like $109 for just the keycaps.
Oh, yeah. Is that the one with the gold Enterprise D for the escape key or something?
Yeah, well, that was the other thing.
You can use it for any key you want to, although if you made it like the J key or something and you're constantly pounding on the thing with your finger, I don't think that the...
The saucer section will start to dip down.
Hey, that'll detach right real easy now. Look at that.
Attach it to the scroll lock. Nobody uses that.
Yeah, I was going
to
say like a scroll lock or something like that. So yeah, there's a little gold key Enterprise, which was kind of nice. So yeah, it's sweet, but it's kind of cheap. Well, it's not cheap, excuse me.
It also is a case where you have to know what some of those keys are on a regular keyboard when you're using this. It's like the backspace is relabeled on this as rescan.
Yeah.
And the enter is engage.
Yeah. And like insert and stuff like that. It says con HQ previous next destination or excuse me, dest ops. So yeah, they're all kind of mixed up. Although that shouldn't be too much of a stretch for some of those keys. I think it'll be fun.
Kids, learn how to touch type.
Yeah. So actually,
stay in school.
Oh yeah.
Drink well, actually,
the
juice.
Core, the core, yeah, the core buttons are $109. You add the number pad, then it's $149. Core plus alternatives. I'm not sure what that is. I thought it's $149. So core plus number pad plus alternatives is $200. So.
Yeah, I guess. But, yeah. Well, I mean, if you want it, you want it.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's nicely done. all the you know, using that Star Trek Elkar's font and everything on there, and all different colors of the keys. So it's very, very nicely done. And a reminder that we will have links to all the stories we're talking about in the show notes, which you can find over at thetopicistrek.com. That's thetopicistrek. There we go. Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, I did want to add that in the show notes, there's a video to where I actually saw this to begin with, was on the Tested website. And they're actually taking an old keyboard, not an old one, I'm sorry, a repurposing a keyboard with these keycaps, and they kind of go through the whole process of them doing that. So,
well, fortunately, they speed up the replacement of the keys. It's,
I'm sure that it's a little cheaper for them too to be able to buy a key set. I'm not bitter.
No, not at all. Not at all. So while Craig is sitting there being bitter, let's move on to Chuck.
This story comes for us in the Des Moines Register. It says, it's not every day that a starship captain gets to dine with the Pope, but that's what happened on Halloween night. William Shatner dined at Flying Mango on Hickman Road in Des Moines, surprising costume-clad staff and guests as they were having dinner. I'm cosplaying as William Shatner. Server
I don't believe it!
You my suck!
My next role is the Pope.
It's a step down, but there you go.
From God.
a pay cut.
Server and photographer Mandy Miller took a picture of Shatner with co-owner of the Flying Mango, Mike Wedeking. Weed King? Weed King sounds like he's more of a lawn specialist, but we'll go with that.
Yeah, that's I don't know if you want a chef named Weed King. It just, no.
He was dressed as the Pope for Halloween. Weed King noticed Shatner after he walked into the busy restaurant and hurt his nose. Just kidding.
Yeah.
To help him with the evening service. My hostess said, we're pretty sure, actually positive, that William Shatner is at table 23, said Weed King. Shatner is in town performing at the Hoyt Sherman Palace at 8 p.m. Thursday in Shatner's World. We just live in it. A good title. His one-man show that takes audiences on a voyage through his life and career. 2 days before Halloween, Shatner asks his followers on Twitter, what's happening in Des Moines? Where's the best restaurant? I need the deets. Three people.
It's hard to type like that, you know. It's all caps and lowercase and lots of extra spaces.
Takes practice.
Three whole people recommended the Flying Mango for its good food and Bloody Marys. He was extremely engaging and really personable, said Weed King. He was very complimentary about the food, both he and his road manager. I was actually caught off guard by how interested he was in us. It was really humbling. He made it all about us. Weed King said Shatner invited him to sit at his table, and they chatted for about 20 minutes. Shatner and his road manager sampled three entrees, including the redneck surf and turf with Cajun catfish, loin bag ribs, red beans and rice, and cornbread for $23. I should be doing this.
Right.
The Louisiana platter.
I'm getting a kickback from this restaurant, by the way. I'm just wondering. Okay.
He had the Red Lobster. No, they didn't go to Red Lobster. He had the Louisiana platter with red beans and rice, chicken Creole, and andouille sausage for $18, and the lime and garlic chicken with mango salsa over black pepper fettuccine and garlic bread for $16. Shatner's touring manager said it was the most honest food they've had on the tour.
What does that even mean? I don't even know what that means.
It was genuine. It didn't taste like it was fabricated. Fresh.
It was free.
Shatner, age 86, is a Canadian actor, producer, blah, blah, blah. We know all about that.
His character's from Iowa.
Of the flying manager.
There's a picture of him and the Pope when he posted on Twitter. And Flying Mango co-owner Mike Weed King checks the ribs at the restaurant smoker in a 2006 file photo. Wow.
Wow. Glad
they
we
got more
that.
Pictures of him than they do of Shatner, apparently. So since we've gone this far with it, you can find it, the Flying Mango, at 4545 Hickman Road in Des Moines.
Ding. Yeah. Gotcha.
When you go in, say the topic is Trek sent you. It's good for... free water. I don't know.
They might laugh at you.
Yeah, right.
Tell them you heard it on this podcast and get charged an extra 20%.
It's called a nuisance fee.
Nuisance fee. Get this guy out of here. Hey, I gotta say one thing about William Shatner. You know, is at this point,
that he's no longer a vegetarian. Yes, I definitely agree.
Well, no, as old as he is now, he's 86. He still gets around so good, man.
He does.
Yeah, he's like busy all the time. So I don't know.
Oh, he's right up there with my dad, and he gets around.
Sure. No, I'm not discounting that. I'm just saying. I'm just like.
Did he get his picture taken with the Pope at the Flying Mango? I don't think so.
Come on. Photo op for your dad.
I'll dress up as Farnsworth and I'll be older than he is.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on.
My great great grandfather. I'm sorry.
From Des Moines.
Wait, wasn't Shatner from? No, he. It was from
Riverside.
Des Moines. Yeah. Riverside, Iowa. But he said Des Moines in one point. I swear he did.
Just, no, I think he just said, I'm from Iowa. I only work in space.
That. Okay.
Yeah.
Now I'm getting old. All right, moving on.
All right. This next story comes to us from IO9. It says, listen to this short album of unused Star Trek Discovery themes. Hmm. Jeff Russo is the official composer for CBS's new Star Trek, but he wasn't the only one in the running. At one point, Star Trek VI composer Cliff Edelman was in consideration, and though it didn't work out, he kept working. As revealed in a Facebook live chat earlier this week and reported by Trek Movie, Edelman, who composed the score for Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, was at one point last year in talks with Discovery co-creator Brian Fuller to work on the show. Hmm. When I came in, Brian described what we were doing, and he was so interested in me possibly scoring the series, he asked me if I would write a theme, Edelman said. According to Edelman, he initially connected with Fuller on the recommendation of Nicholas Meyer, Star Trek VI's director, and a consulting producer on Discovery. So Edelman wrote a theme and then another piece for Fuller's consideration. But when Fuller stepped down as showrunner, the deal fell apart. New people came in and they went in a different direction, Edelman explained. The reason I was there was because of Brian Fuller. And when he left, I kind of went with him and wasn't kept on. I was not signed on. I was never hired or engaged formally. I was just encouraged. You can do it. But even though his official work ended, Edelman was enchanted with what he'd made. So he added to the two pieces he'd already written and developed a full EP, which is kind of an oxymoron, isn't it? Developing a full EP called Into the Unknown, which you can listen to now on Spotify. The tracks are intriguing glimpses into an alternate universe where Fuller's full version for Star Trek came to fruition. A pity it didn't work out. Maybe. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to listen to this or not.
No.
But it's interesting because, well, first of all, two of the tracks, you know, are written kind of as adjuncts to the two that are there. And the tracks aren't very long. I think the longest one is still under 3 minutes or so, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. It has a very, and granted, these might not be fully produced pieces. It kind of almost has I don't want to use this term degradingly, but a sci-fi original series sound to it. It lots of uses of timpanis and there's some synthesizers in there, and it didn't seem to have a full lush sound. But as I said, without using it in context, it's kind of hard to tell. But if you have a Spotify account, even a free one, which is what I have, you can still listen to this this thing. And there again, we'll have the links in the show notes, and you can tell us what you think of it. The two pieces that are titled, the first one is nondescript. I'm not sure if that one's the theme, and the second one seems to refer to the battle of the binary stars, battle at the binary stars, but. You know, was it cut to anything? Does it, you know, could you overlay it onto any particular part of the produced feature, and would it make sense? Hmm. I think that's a better way to see it, you know, because listening to soundtracks without the context.
Yeah.
Sometimes just doesn't work.
Actually, if you play it in time with the Wizard of Oz, it's perfectly time. Like,
as long as you watch a Wizard of Oz version that fits an EP.
Well, I was thinking, surely you've heard of
The Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah, Dark Side of the Moon. Yeah.
Would it live up to the quality standards of this show to use as an alternate theme?
If the piece I was listening to was the theme, the first track on it, I didn't feel like it was, I don't know, just it didn't seem to have a focus to it.
Okay.
I feel like what we ended up with as a focus, as a theme by Russo, has more focus than this. I'm not the biggest fan in the world of the Discovery theme. I feel like it needs more variety in it, but I feel like it's a more cohesive piece than what I was listening to. But again, you know, if you guys listen to it, you know, let me know what you think next time we talk.
Yeah, we'll do.
It's free to listen to it.
It's also on Google Play Music. I checked.
Okay, cool.
Just throwing that out there.
Alrighty. Well, I'm going to throw it back to you because you've got the next story.
Yeah. And this is from Cherry Tree. And it's a website, I guess they make, or a company, they make computers. And here is one called the Borg Cube PC.
Because it went so well for Apple.
Yes, and it runs Windows or Linux, so you can assimilate yourself.
Windows 3.1 or later.
Yeah. Some assimilation required. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So it's a pretty cool looking case. It's actually more or less the case for the computer. I mean, there's a computer in it. But it has a Borg cube look to it, and it has little green lights that kind of shine through. Actually, the close-up reminds me of like a Lego, like somebody put together a Lego cube, you know, with black pieces. And it's kind of neat. Yeah. So it's a 4K resolution experience.
Wow.
And, so you would get super 4K, whatever gaming piece. It's like a gaming PC, really. It's powered with an i7. I'm trying to look. It's not really this is not really a story. So I'm kind of,
well, I thought it was interesting because I thought I had the impression that they were kind of trying to push this as a VR capable machine, although I don't see that spec on here.
Yeah. And a lot of computers are doing that nowadays with VR support, where you can just plug up a VR headset in the back of your computer.
You just have to gouge out one of your eyes and put the VR in there. It works fine.
For a Borg one. Yeah. That's totally what makes it.
Yeah.
I'm surprised the form factor is pretty small on this. It's only 6x6x6 inches in the U.S. and it is a mini STX motherboard. So I mean, it's it's a compact form factor.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. So neat. I don't think you'd be using it as your desktop computer. I think it's really. I mean, would you? I don't know.
It's got an i7 in it.
It depends on which one. There's three different versions. There's one with an i3, i5, and an i7 CPU.
True.
The i7 one is about $1,300, it says. Mm. Which, it probably have enough power to play games, I guess. I don't know what kind of video I'm looking at here. I don't see it.
I don't see the graphics spec on here.
It'd be neat, but I don't know.
Limited edition, only 359 pieces. I'm not sure if that's how many they made or how many do you have to assemble to make your piece.
Yeah, it comes as Craig was saying, it's like Lego, so it comes just all these pieces. You got to snap them all together.
IKEA made computer.
Buy this along with that Millennium Falcon Lego project.
Little drawings of Borgs trying to show you how to assemble the pieces.
Little cartoon Borgs on the manual.
All right, well, let's move on to our last story, and that will turn things over to Craig. To Chuck for that one.
The other Craig.
Yeah, that's right.
looking at my show notes, and that my brain was not doing what my mouth was saying.
From Popular Mechanics, we have 8 sci-fi writers write on where Star Trek should go next. Star Trek is a show that spans countless worlds, involves the lives of hundreds of species and tackles themes of war, love, loss, humanity, and whatever happened to be in that one where Deanna Troi turned into a fish.
Hey, let's...
Star Trek Discovery, the first Trek series in a dozen years, is now exploring that universe, but now that the franchise is back on TV, we couldn't help but wonder what adventures other sci-fi writers would like to see. So we asked them. By Cameron Hurley, author of Stars Are Legion, says there's no better time for Star Trek to do what it does best, engaging in tough moral dilemmas. The episode I'm most interested in seeing Star Trek explore is one that addresses the scourge of perpetual war and how it de-escalated it to come out the other side. He's talking about A Taste of Armageddon from TOS. There's another one called entitled Star Trek Lower Decks by Rob Beaufard, author of Impact. There's always something that bugged me about Star Trek. In almost all the series and movies, the focus is on the officers, the ones on the bridge, the guys heading out to fix whatever mess the red shirts have gotten themselves into this time. But what always struck me about ships like the Enterprise, and now to the Discovery, is that they have a huge crew. The Enterprise alone has a complement of over 1,000. I've always wondered...
Wait a minute, which Enterprise?
What about the lower-level workers of Star Trek? The ones that made up those numbers, the Enterprise may not have needed... cooks, thanks to food replicators, but those 1,000 crew members must have jobs. And they go into, you know, what about the poor schlub who gets to get stuck with
scrub the toilets
with the gig of the laundry machines? You know, scrub the toilets. There is one person we have known, one author in here that we know on the next Star Trek, yep. Transporter Mayhem by Mer Lafferty, author of Six Wakes. I can't do a Mer impression, so forget that's coming. You can imagine this, yeah, in your head if you want. Yeah. I've always been fascinated by the transporter and the various capabilities it has. The fact that the transporter saves a limited time backup of every person it transports was only touched on a few times in any of the series. This makes sense. There are too many ways it could be abused as Deus Ex Machina, fix for half of the problems that come across in the series. Oh, Tasha got killed by the black goo. It's okay. We saved her DNA and can print a new one right away, Captain.
Yeah, quickly.
Still, putting aside the difficulties surrounding the aging and dead actors, the ultimate Star Trek show would be for a Ferengi-financed hacker to gain access to the transporter traces of every member of every Star Trek show and bring them all back. The new Star
Trek... Where's the profit in this?
I'm just going to replicate Latinum.
What rule of acquisition is that?
If there's a franchise out there, exploit it.
I think we've already been there. Okay.
110, look it up.
Yeah. So she talks about various worlds and universes that you could put these people into. It says there would be a side romantic plot with Troy, Worf, every version of Dax, and Alexander living on Risa. Speaking of Alexander, all the kids, Nog, Jake, Alexander, Molly, and young Wesley, could have a Risa-based Stand By Me kind of adventure. Very imaginative. There are several other stories if you want to read in here by a couple other authors. Fun stuff to read. And interesting animated GIFs, too, with people beaming in and out.
By the way, on Discovery, I was noticing that even though the story revolves around the important people, I'd say the most important, more important people on the ship, it's not necessarily just the bridge crew.
Well, that's true. Singular. I mean, I have to keep reminding myself that Dr. Culber is not the chief medical officer. I'm wondering, have we ever seen the chief medical officer?
And Tilly is ensign.
Cadet.
In fact, she's a cadet.
Cadet, yeah. Why is a cadet working in engineering?
That's her extracurricular focus. Activities?
That's her internship? I don't know.
It's the script.
Ah.
They wrote her in the script. Engineering.
Well, we know that's true. That's completely true.
So, I mean, you know, Saru and Lorca, they're big characters. But, you know, when Lorca was making a speech or when Michael was talking him into letting her go on the Klingon ship, you know, I started noticing everybody's looking back at him. I'm like, Wait, we don't even know these people's names.
I realize that too. We haven't even explored. I'm hoping they drill into some stories about these people, like the lady who kind of looks like Nebula with the full metal face.
Yeah. Well, he did call her out by name, but I don't remember.
Yeah, she's got a name, as does the one with just the partial prosthesis around her eye. And you know, the girl with the dreads, or you know, there's so many people on that bridge. We never even said hi.
Even the one guy that started to take on jump at Mud. Remember?
Yeah.
Don't do it.
I think he refers to him as, you know, like a generic or unnamed, you know, bridge crew member or something like that.
I was like, how appropriate.
Crossing over into the Orville now.
Yeah.
All righty. So I think it's time to...
That broke that, Chuck. Wow. Way to go.
Yeah.
Killed.
We're going to close up the subspace chatter. Ooh.
Hey, wait.
Didn't realize it's vacuum sealed. Yes, yes.
I did put a small note in there.
Oh.
To be sure and check out Star Trek Continues. It's the final finale.
Yes.
It's the part two of their last two episodes. So go check it out. You can find it on YouTube, and I think on their... Go to their website. I think they point you to a Vimeo or something. So
unable to comply. Internal scanner relays have been damaged.
No, it's okay. We reopened the subspace chatter just for this. Don't send them out the airlock. It's all right.
So go check it out. Give them some good vibes, and because I think they've done a fantastic job with their whole project.
Okay. Now, once again, we will close out subspace chatter. it lost its finesse the second time around. I don't know. Now it's time to go on our main mission. I like that. It's time for us to head on a main mission where we take a Z minus 10,000 meter dive into one subject. And in this case, I mean three subjects, and try to stay on course. And we need to, even though we've played it already, let's play once again. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Stop!
Spoiler alert.
Because since our last episode, we've had debut episodes 7, 8, and 9 of Star Trek Discovery. So we're going to be talking about all three of those episodes, which take us all the way to the end of chapter one and the mid-season break for Star Trek Discovery.
So engage the spore drive and go to January.
That's right.
It's not a time traveling.
Is it?
Where did that come from? Oh, we don't know yet.
However, speaking of time travel, if you want to be doing a little bit of that, like 30 minutes at a time, well, that takes us to our first episode we're talking about, which is Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad. And it features the return of one Harry Mudd.
Corn-scented Mudd.
And in this episode, Harry is trying to discover the secrets of Discovery. Yes, which allows him to loop time every 30 minutes so he can gain access to the ship, discover its secrets, and then sell them to the Klingons because Lorca kind of pissed him off.
Yeah.
Stole Hermione Granger's time turner.
He did. And,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
When someone gets pissed off, what they do is they use a time device and keep killing that person again and again and again and again.
If I had a dime for every time.
So in the first few loops of this, we find that Stamets can't quite get his point across before they blow up. But yet by the latter few loops, he can do that in about 15 seconds. Now, tell me a secret that will prove to you that I'm in a time loop. That'll only get you so far. Somehow they disseminated across the whole ship and can rig the captain's chair and in that 30-minute loop.
I figure what has to happen for this to make sense is what we don't see is Stamets figuring out, okay, I need to do this so that Burnham believes me.
Right.
And she immediately has to do that so that Tyler believes me, and this has to happen. So probably got to be shorter and shorter amount of time. So look, I don't have time for this. You da 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 da. Okay, we're done with that part. Great, let's move on to the other stuff that's going to get done.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think that it would be kind of tough to see all those iterations. I do agree that to get to the point where they're able to, he's able to convince them in enough time, they come up with a plan and then figure out how to rejigger the captain's chair and all this kind of stuff.
Well, yeah. it's like the Groundhog's Day, you know, when Bill Murray was going in all the loops, after a while, he knew everything that was happening in the town.
Well, he did, and he was accumulating these skills, but nobody else around him was. You still have to go through a lot of that stuff. And I mean, it had a Groundhog Day feel to it. It had a, you know, I think everybody's done a variation on the time loop thing. I like the way they executed.
You can go to thetopicistrek.com and see my review of this episode, episode 7, where I talk about time loops.
Yeah.
All different sorts.
The new breakfast cereal from thetopicistrek.com.
But I think
they're good. You can have them over and over again.
But I think he got so familiar with everything, he was had a much easier time communicating with everybody, you know.
Well, also, I mean, I think that unlike something like Groundhog's Day, we say that, yes, Bill Murray, in that case, is the only one aware of what's going on. But in this series of time loops, you have two people that are aware of what's going on. You have your protagonist, Harry Mudd, and you also have Stamets, who's aware of what's going on.
Okay.
So I think he's also learning, oh, Mudd is probably going to do this, or he doesn't know about that, or, you know, so
but
he's
Mudd
able
Mudd doesn't
to,
figure out that it's that Stamets is aware until much, much later.
Yeah.
Right.
He doesn't know until what's going on. He's not paying attention to the larger picture. He's been focused on trying to break the ship and figure out its secrets. So
yeah, he has no need to go to the Saturday Night Fever disco party that's going on.
Yeah, I was getting a little old after a while. What did you think of the way they wrapped it up?
I had issues with the way they wrapped it up.
I thought
it was cute, but there's issues. I mean, the father is an arms dealer who was just led on board Discovery, and Harry Mudd knows how Discovery works. Is that an issue?
Well, I'll tell you my issue with it. Not so much the arms dealer part, but the fact that he had basically taken over the ship. He commandeered the ship, however many times, but he was in control of it and killed Lorca all those times. And he was, intent on wanting to do that. Yet they let him go with what knowledge he ended up with about the ship, which I'm sure he knew something, with his pseudo bride to be.
I thought they were supposed to be. Yeah, I thought that was supposed to be a bad thing. We're going to turn him over to the dad, who's been after Mudd forever for abandoning his daughter, and this is going to be punishment. And it's like, oh, it's okay. I miss you, sweetie. Let's go home. Like,
I can't tell if we, the audience, who know how his relationship goes with Stella, are, oh, that's cute because we know that that goes horribly, horribly bad. But if you're not familiar with that story, you're going, what?
Actually, yeah, but I'm still going, huh? You know, actually, if this happened, if it happened on TOS, you'd hear that little cutesy music, you know. As they were, where Spock looks at Kirk like with an eye, like, well, that was annoying.
One raised eyebrow,
yeah.
So I hear what you're saying, though, Craig, about killing Lorca, but of course you couldn't convince a jury because it's like, Your Honor, he killed that man.
Hundreds of times.
The guy that's sitting there talking to us? Well, yes, that's not the point.
I know, yeah. But he was the, I think he did. He was as bad as Michael Burnham trying to mutiny the ship. He commandeered the ship.
Right.
He was trying to take it over and steal their, during wartime and steal their secrets.
So I was kind of hoping that that their ship was planted with a bug or something, because they figured, all right, well, clearly Harry knows how to get in touch with the Klingons. There's some sort of stuff going on there. We need to track this guy to find out what's happening. But we don't get any indication that that was the case. And as far as I know, these are Harry Mudd's only two appearances this season.
Yeah, so but they have left it open, though, for him to easily come back.
Oh, yeah. I've just got a feeling the fan reaction to Rain doing that part. And
even though we had issues with the episode, I liked the episode. I loved it. I thought it was a good episode.
Yeah, I thought it was fun. I thought it was a bit of a stretch of reality for that 30-minute continuum thing, but I thought it was a fun story.
Yeah, I think it was also a nice break for the kind of, not heavy-handedness, but the heaviness of some of the episodes we've seen up to that point.
Right. I mean, it starts off kind of heavy, then you go, okay, this is just getting weird now.
Yeah.
You know? So the question at the end, I suppose, was in the story arc, is the bit that we get out of the story arc is just the advancement of Burnham and Tyler's relationship?
Yeah, I think that was ultimately the goal of that. Kind of break the ice a little bit.
And then we move on from there to our next episode, Siwis Pakim Parabellum.
Which is something in Latin, I think. It's
in English, that would translate roughly to, if you wish for peace, prepare for war.
There. I knew Pashem was peace.
And we head to the planet Pavel Chekhov, as Chuck said.
Right. Pavel.
So Pavel. Where they're trying to do a thing.
This one started out very open-ended. We're on the planet. It's like, what is going on here?
I listened to the explanation of what they were trying to do several times. You know, Burnham has a narration, and she describes about the planet. Okay, get about the planet, that the planet has a resonance, and all the different creatures and plants and animals all have their own frequencies, and there's a what appears to be a natural transmitter, and that the planet is transmitting out. Got all of that.
Yeah.
How that they hope to use that to figure out how to defeat cloaked Klingon ships. I didn't.
It was kind of like how you can break a wine glass with a certain tone of voice.
Yeah. And it's, they said that you could hear it throughout, not just throughout the planet, but wasn't it the sector or something? You could hear the
antenna.
Yeah.
The antenna would broadcast into space.
Yeah, right.
If they had said the word Gaia in there, I would have turned it off right away.
The word what?
Gaia.
Oh, okay.
So the idea that was,
did you watch Captain Planet? Come on.
No.
So
no,
the idea
I did not.
Was
by the
entire planet was transmitting, and therefore the signal was that powerful that it would reach that far, and therefore if they could piggyback onto it or something and being able to, but that would mean that they should be able to, in close range, as the Discovery was close to the ship of the dead, have something that would be able to detect the cloak ship. I mean, they have to have the thing that they're trying to amplify.
Right.
I couldn't quite. It's essentially an episode that's a Saru episode. Let's get that.
Yes.
Yeah. I was going to say that was a chance for Saru to shine.
And we learned a lot of things about Saru. We learned that he's can crush phasers with his hands. Didn't know that.
Neat party trick.
Can run 80 kilometers an hour.
Faster than a speeding cheetah. Yeah.
And he's got a donkey kick.
Yeah, he's got a donkey kick. Well, that one made sense, though.
Yeah, his long legs and the shoes he wears. Yep.
Yeah, he's got hooves. Yeah. Why wouldn't he? You know.
I know. I thought it was funny. He turned around and kicked Michael and went, oh, that so makes sense. Yeah. But it was a good chance. I loved it because, you know, we'd heard him, his little diatribe about how his race is all about fear and, you know, death and all that kind of stuff. So he found peace within himself, or because of the indigenous on that planet. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was a neat aspect to him. And of course, it's also an opportunity for him and Michael to grow a little bit more because he, when he was in that state where he was out of his mind a little bit, he said what he meant. And then, you know, he kind of not backtracked so much, but, you know, they kind of came to terms with it when they got back on the ship.
Yeah.
So.
And I felt like at that point though, that I felt watching that episode, we need to kind of get this resolved because it's been coming up an awful lot. We had the episode where he said, you know, you took her away from me. You know, mm-hmm. I was supposed to be second in command and learn from her, and you got that. And then you caused her to be dead. Essentially, it was like blames, and they were trying to come to grips with that. And, you know, everything I can have you take away from me. I'm thinking, okay, we realize they have issues, but we need to start working through these issues. And, you know.
And I think that was the point of the episode, really.
I felt like we had a little bit more of that at the closure of the final show, too.
Yeah.
Where they had that luck. And we'll talk about that in a sec.
Too bad we don't get that on the Orville, right? Between Kelly and Ed.
Yeah, like, that would be great. Okay, issues resolved. We'll never speak of this again. Check.
Yay. And speak about it again.
Yeah. That's right.
All right, and speaking of the next episode, with the much more easy to pronounce title, Into the Forest I Go.
Run, Forest, run.
Which is Latin for.
Yeah, which is Latin for the forest I go into.
No, that's Yoda.
I was going to say. Wait. The topic is what, Chuck?
Trek.
Topic is Trek. Yes. Yeah. And in this episode, our lovely planet, Pavel Chekhov, has sent out a signal into space and invited, hey, Klingons, come on and join Starfleet over here.
Which I thought was a good idea. You know, invite them to the table, play a little family feud. Let's
get them together. Yeah.
But it seemed like that was going to be their entire involvement was just, why don't you guys come here too? And then we'll just sit over here while you guys, you know, talk it out.
I thought it took the Klingons an awful long time to get to Pavo. I mean, they detected them like an hour before they got there, but yet the Discovery had enough time to have a little discussion, hang around the planet for a while, warp some,
and then come back.
Yeah, before the Klingons ever showed up. And we also learned
3 hours at that.
They can do a spore jump out of warp drive, which I thought was pretty impressive.
I mean, that's going to be murder on the ship, though. It's like, whoa, hey, wait, make up your mind.
Keep hammering that clutch. Reverse
to murder on Stamets, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly was, because here we had Stamets, and I liked how they confirmed this in After Trek, because I thought 133, wherever you heard 33 before, if you remember the
I was going to see if Chuck could pull it out because I knew.
Yeah, I was thinking about that earlier when we were talking about numbers. The thing that amused me was they did about 4 or 5 jumps before the ship went to cloak. And then they started counting 133. So he said, can you do 133? And he goes, okay.
And by 133, I mean 137.
Yeah.
Right? So say it was almost 140, I think. But yeah, you're right.
And ridiculous. And I thought that was very well done that, you know, I think they spaced out cutting to how many jumps it was.
Yeah.
Very effectively, because you see this, you figure, okay, so they're going to cut to the point where they're at like 75 and they say, how many? It's something like, I don't know, 30. It was like, what?
Yeah, no, they kept it in sync as to where they were.
I'm saying they didn't shortcut it. They felt like, no, you were going to drag, get to the idea. This is like a lot. So we're going to cut back to this and all these different places where it's like, no, it's like we're in the teens, we're in the 40s, we're in the 60s. You know, yeah, we got another.
I have like 60
more to go.
One like beef with said, this episode.
Oh, go ahead.
My one beef was those sensors. They had to put one in the aft and they had to put one in the bow. And they
beeped. I know where you're going with this.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it.
So the one in the closet, okay, the one in the closet I can get away with, you know, establishing communications with Discovery. Discovery communications established.
Where's the silent mode on this thing?
Right, and then let's go to the bridge and do the same damn thing. You know, no one's going to notice because Klingons are playing party music 24/7 on the bridge. They'll never hear this.
It's Saturday Night Fever. They heard it on the other ship, and they just love it.
Yeah,
I love that because to me that was so much like classic Trek, that this is it's too big, it's too bulky. Why does it have lights on it for this thing they're trying to do? It's just
what was that they pointed out on After Trek? It even has the Starfleet logo on the top. Yeah.
So in case you lost it, they know who to bring it home to.
It's got a toll-free number on it as well.
If lost, it's yours. If lost, return to Discovery.
Postage paid. There we go.
Yeah, when they said that, I actually watched the show again after Trek, and I went, sure enough, there's a star. It says Starfleet Command, and it's all blue and flashing. I'm like, what the? Why did they just beam them in to begin with?
Burnham can just walk onto the bridge and hide behind a pillar and put one there, apparently.
Yeah, no problem. And it's just like a... opens up, makes a bunch of noise, says, connection with Discovery complete.
Right. Yeah, why don't they just do like an old modem sound?
What is that sound? Yeah. Hey, well, why didn't they just... Okay, I asked Harrison this, and he didn't have a clear answer because I've got a little more Starfleet under my belt. But I'm like, why didn't they just beam in the devices?
Because they didn't know exactly where to put them.
Yeah, I'm wondering if Burnham like wouldn't say like she's it's very complicated and you got to send me over there like maybe she had an ulterior motive to begin with, feeling like she was the one that like had to go over there and do this
to destroy the ship of the dead.
Yeah, and she was not going to let them do anything other than send her over.
Yeah, she made a big point about going over there. The thing that I thought probably could have been trimmed without any loss of storyline was the Admiral. The whole point about her being taken hostage, her being beaten up by what's her name?
Laurel.
Mm-hmm.
And then being a diversion or a rescue, you know, turning this operation into a rescue mission for her. I think the whole season could have stood pretty solid without her.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. I mean, she's still an outstanding threat to Lorca, and Lorca realized it because you saw his reaction when told that, oh, she's expected to make a full recovery. Oh, that's great. Because remember, she wants him out.
Oh, we're lost somewhere and I don't know where we are. Oh, rats. That always happens.
I just slept with her and I'm not that happy that she's alive.
Yeah. And someone pointed out that at the very last minute, just before that last jump, not 133, the jump back to Starbase 46.
Yeah.
Lorca opens up his keypad, accesses the spore drive, puts in coordinates and quickly closes it again.
I thought, for a minute you saw the 133 jumps and they got purged and he did something, but I didn't quite catch the details of that.
Because there's like a Lorca override or something like that inserted in there. And it's above jump 133. It goes 132 and then Lorca override. And then jump 133 destination unknown or something like that, which
may have something to do with where they wound up and why.
I'm not sure whether he's trying to get out of there because he knows if he hangs around and Cornwell is going to recover that they're going to take Discovery from him. Well,
and they did make a point of him showing the star map in his office saying, yeah, I've been keeping tabs on all this.
Yeah, check. You can go to alternate places and, you know,
yeah,
parallel universes.
They purposely put that up there, his discussion with Stamets about, look, we can go to these alt verses and, you know, this one's done by J.J. Abrams and this one's.
Yeah.
This is the Kelvin timeline right here. Right.
So, scroll. This one just has a goatee. I don't understand what that one is.
So we're led to believe that we're in some alternate universe or dimension that at the end of episode 9.
Well, we know, and this is, you know, do we have to hit spoiler, spoiler alert, spoiler alert?
Spoiler, spoiler.
So we know that Jonathan Frakes, and it was confirmed by a producer afterwards, I think Alex Kurtzman, that there are Mirror Universe episodes coming.
Yes, I did hear about that.
So
goatees and sashes for everyone.
Yeah, yay. So it's possible this is where they've mistakenly jumped to.
Yeah, I was trying to, I've been waiting for that to, that shoe to fall, because I knew that a Mirror Universe was coming episode. And,
you know, I wouldn't have mentioned if it was just that slip, but you know, you have the production company confirming that that's indeed the case. So I'm guessing, because we had the discussion of parallel universes that Lorca was talking mm-hmm. about, that either on purpose or by accident, that they have jumped to an alternate universe.
They can start another war with the Hulkan Council and the whole thing. Just
they can.
Yeah.
Although I suppose you could have the Klingons be the good guys, right, in an alternate universe.
Why is Thor here?
This makes no sense.
Who started up the Bifrost?
And then we still have to
Maybe that's how they get home. Yeah.
And we still have to figure out what the deal is with Tyler, because the story still mm-hmm. doesn't make sense.
Well, they did a lot of flashbacks to his PTSD stuff on that episode.
Right, but it still doesn't make sense that he's talking about the months and months
right.
that this was occurring. And we know that Lorca shows up 3 weeks after Laurel has left Vok, or was with Vok, you know, just out when they escaped from the ship of the dead. So there's no months and months and months of this relationship between mm-hmm. Tyler and Laurel.
Yeah, it's no accident that she's on Discovery right now.
Right. Well, that's obvious that she's there. I mean, we knew her conversation with Cornwell that
she wanted to go.
Very interested in, do you have a death penalty? And get me to Discovery.
I think she's really trying hard to play both sides of everything. So
yeah,
she even mentioned that, you know, that's what her family does. That's what their house did.
So she might be playing, you know, the Federation as well, or she might be playing the Klingons going, she clearly has no need or no love for Cole after discovering murdered members of her family in that room. I think it just confirmed the way she already felt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think she has to worry about him anymore.
Yeah. But this whole idea of what's going on. Yeah. And the question is, what is going to go on with the war now that Cole is gone? Because Cole has given other ships the cloaking technology so they can use that without him. Are we going to have another Klingon house step up? And be the house.
The cloaking thing kind of blows my mind as well. Hey, they found out the frequency. Don't bother changing it, though. We'll give it to all the other Starfleet ships so they can find cloaked cruisers as well. But let's hope that the Klingons don't get wise and change the frequency of their cloaking device. I'm like, well, you know, that'd be the first thing.
It wasn't just the frequency. It wasn't just the frequency. They were looking for the.
It was a defect in the.
Yeah, the defect. So they needed the frequency to be able to scan the.
And the Klingon software engineers can't make a patch.
Hey, I would say no, because they just figured out how to clone it. Maybe not.
I'm thinking it's a little thin.
The instruction manual was on the ship of the dead.
And you know,
the source code. So,
all the technical support questions were routed through that ship. And so, you know.
Hey, I'm going to tell you something. High school was tough for me. I can imagine any nerd Klingon trying to be a scientist. It's kind of hell to pay. It's going to be a tough life.
The nerds are in Vulcan.
Yeah. But I don't know. I've got lots of thoughts on that last show. I thought it was great when they started, you know, they started doing the jumps and they started scanning everything. And
I felt like they were like paparazzi because it sounded like flash pops going off all of it.
Yeah.
I'm space famous.
Smile, Klingon, Cole.
Yeah. Apparently that ship doesn't shoot where the crap. They were like, shoot sharper.
I like how it was behind
them. One job.
And Cole goes to the front window and starts looking around.
What else can he do?
It's like, don't you have a main viewer screen?
It was an ancient ship. It's an old ship.
That's right.
Okay.
It has only one windshield wiper. It's
looked like a B-25. One windshield wiper.
Get this. So I know this is an abbreviated. Well, I say abbreviated. It's just short season. But I'm. So somebody like Voke, I'm like, okay. Cole. Excuse me. I want to see more of him, and I'm interested in him. It's almost like Boba Fett. Just like as soon as you start to get into him, they kill him off.
Right. Well, they made such a big deal about T'Kuvma, and
he's gone. Yeah, he was gone first episode.
Hey, we did get a reprieve from subtitles for a while, too.
Yes. I'm sure everyone out there saying, oh, can the Klingon stop speaking in Klingon?
Yeah, they just have to turn on a universal translator.
Yeah. Now, speaking of Tyler, and I think we all kind of have a suspicion a little bit, but I think there's something to the story that Voke and Tyler are, there's something going on there. There's a relationship. I don't know if Tyler is Voke.
Yeah.
Voke was put in his mind.
That to me feels more like if that is indeed the story, because he's, as we've discussed before, he's too human, too easily human, that he's clearly Tyler, but does he have something planted within him, you know, that's like a sleeper cell issue that's what Laurel is going to try to trigger?
That's true. He saw her and he started having various memories, including a love scene at the end while he was asleep.
The Klingon porn?
Yeah.
Yes.
And you know, that could have been like Volk's memories implanted into him, and her reply was just, I won't let anything happen to you. And then as he's leaving, she says, soon.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So there is a story coming out there, and I'm starting to believe the conspiracy a little bit more, but I don't want to buy into it entirely right now.
Well, I'm kind of with what you said, Clinton. And I mentioned this to Harrison when we watched it, especially in the Harry Mudd episode, it looked like Tyler had, he had way too much on the human nuances of caring about somebody or other people when he stood up and made the speech to everybody. And then the way he feels about Burnham, I'm like, so his nuances are way too human.
Yeah. Talking about going fishing.
Yeah. You know, to just be a Klingon in human skin. That's weird, but it's a weird visual, but you get the idea. I think he's more than that, but there's a connection there somehow.
So whether they used the mind ripper on him and has done something to him, I don't know.
Or, you know, maybe that torture wasn't torture, but it was the surgical altering. You know,
We're going to skin you and put human skin on your face.
It's face off.
and arms off and legs off and back off.
Right.
Back off, man.
Hey, the Klingon is either is which one is he? Is he Nicolas Cage or
John Travolta?
Yeah. John Travolta. I don't know.
Well, they were playing Saturday Night Fever, so I think we're going John Travolta.
Oh, stop. Yeah.
But I think the one of the best things about this is the show finally feels like it's getting its groove. You know, yes. I feel like as with any Trek, you have that awkward stumble out of the gate. You know, what are the characters really about? How stern is his character? How open is his character? What are the relationships between the characters? And the writers are feeling it out, the directors, the actors. And it seems like these three episodes, we were starting to finally get into a groove.
Yeah. And I think the actors are doing a wonderful job with it. I'm particularly invested in Stamets because he started out as this hard ass. And then he got all hippy dippy when he got the spores. And then you could tell something was wrong because he was starting to get all hard ass again. And even Tilly noticed it and went, what's going on? One minute you're like, peace out, man. And the other minute he's going, give me those spores. It's the actor's doing a great job handling this and the different emotions. And I like how that's been done. The other actors are doing a great job too. Don't get me wrong, but
I like Tilly, by the way.
I thought
that her. Oh, I'm so glad you told him about the reaction.
Yeah. Oops.
I thought that was a little obvious.
Well, when she said that, I sat up in my chair and said, "Oh no, you didn't."
Yes, she did. And then she mouths, you know, to stay with.
Sorry.
So sorry.
Yeah.
She would. Yeah, and on After Trek, she said she thought that Tilly was just dying to let it out, you know, the first opportunity.
drop of a feather. Boom! Because I guess she's just not good at keeping secrets.
No. But I do like her character, though. She's not annoying or anything. She just kind of fits in the white spaces between the other characters. I think she does a good job with that.
And we get to find out if they go to an alternate universe, did Stamets actually see Captain Tilly?
Hey, by the way, before we move on.
Yes.
Do you have predictions about the next chapter?
I don't really. Because we got to a point at the end of this episode where, okay, we've had a major victory against the Klingons and that information is being sent other places. The Discovery may be out of the picture at this point. I guess my prediction would be wherever the Discovery is, that when it gets back from wherever it is, that things are not going as well as one would think they were going.
Well, then are you sure that you're in the same universe at that or dimension at that point?
Hmm. Yeah, that's true. How are you going to tell when you actually get back?
Exactly.
To your home?
I thought that the happy ending was a little too happy. I would have been okay if they had sacrificed Paavo. Yeah, it's like, hey, if we can blow up and get their shield frequency and save the people on the entities on the planet, and I went, well, okay, you checked off everything you wanted to do. That seemed a little too convenient.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think that we've had a couple of these cases where they tried to save something and it didn't work. It didn't work at the Battle of the Binary Star. It didn't work when they tried to save one of the recent episodes, you know, the Gagarin, I think it was. You know, they came in and they tried to block the torpedoes and one of them still hit the other ship. And they went, yep, okay, well, let's score out of here. So
we're done. Black alert. Yeah.
You're feeling they were due for a break.
Yeah, let's win one for a change.
All right. So, what are your predictions for the next chapter, Chuck?
Stamets is going to have white eyes.
Ooh!
Whoa! That's out of nowhere.
Out of the box thinking.
Yeah.
I saw the scenes for next time.
I'll tell you what I think. I think that my prediction is them destroying the sarcophagus. Ship, and
I thought that, of course, was the Ship of the Dead.
Yeah, sarcophagus.
Yeah.
So them destroying that ship,
yes,
I think, is going to lead to a defragmentation of the, or a breakdown of the Klingons, and I think the war will go for the star in Starfleet's favor to kind of start wrapping that part up towards the end of the season.
Right, because we have to get to a point where that war is over,
mm-hmm,
for it to turn into a cold war. And I think you're right that whether or not you wrap up the entire war this season, or whether it just kind of devolves into infighting with occasional skirmishes with, you know, the Federation.
Yeah, that's got to be a challenge for the writers, is how long do you drag out this war?
Well, they did say that the war will not last past this season.
Okay.
That next season will be other challenges. So that's the backdrop on this season, and there'll be a different one on the next one.
Interesting.
So you're saying you predicted what the writers told you was happening?
No, I'm talking. Maybe. No, I'm saying, I'm talking about in terms of the story. I think that the sarcophagus being destroyed, and Cole is not around anymore, that things are going to fragment, yeah, over there, and it's not going to solidify quite the way that he wanted. Of course, he wanted to be in control of it, but they'll get back together and be an empire. But I don't think, I think that was the beginning of the end for the war. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think you're right that, I mean, face it, this war had two leaders and they're both dead. You know, you had right. T'Kuvma, who was attempting to brought them all together.
And it was Michael's fault on both.
Yeah, it's really.
Well, and also, speaking of her, I think that she will somehow get reinstated, and her sentence is going to be commuted, I think, because of the things that she's done.
Yeah. I think that you know, you also want to get to that point because, it's, you know, we get that whole dichotomy of one episode of Classic Trek where they say there's never been a mutiny in, you know, Starfleet. You go, but Burnham, Spock, your own family member did one.
Yeah.
So I figured that you've got to get that wiped off the book somehow.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't think they're going to resolve that somehow, and mm-hmm, she'll be commuted, or her sentence commuted, and she'll be reinstated, and then that way it's not really an issue going forward.
She'll be sent to Rurapente.
Oh.
Yeah, never spoken of again.
All righty. Well, we will find out the answers to some of those questions on January 7th when Star Trek Discovery returns. We'll be back before then with more episodes of The Topic is Trek. And it's time to close up Main Mission, and a very quick Warp Speed Roundtable is coming up.
Do I have a Warp Speed on here? Yeah.
Burp, burp, burp.
The command functions are offline.
Dang it.
sounds like Keith is over there.
Impulse power?
Insufficient sensor data.
Oh.
We're not doing well to the end of the show.
Scan it again, Chuck.
All right. Well, let's do our Warp Speed Roundtable. This is, we take a quick topic. Everyone gives their quick answer to this question. And we're going to call this game Choose Your Roomie. Burnham has Tilly as a cabin roommate. Which of these would you prefer and why? Would you prefer Quark?
No.
Tom Paris?
No.
Or Wesley Crusher?
No.
I'm going to start with Chuck.
Deanna Troi.
No.
Nurse Chapel. Come on.
Just don't wait for the translation. Answer the question.
I'm going with Wesley.
Okay, and why?
Why? He's smart. I like hanging out with smart people. I learn things.
Okay, fair enough. And you like the outfits he wears, I'm sure. All right.
Let's move on. You know, we should have qualified that later. Later, Wesley.
I thought you were referring to his clown sweater. You've seen him on.
Yeah. All right. How about you, Craig?
I would say Tom Paris need to be my roommate, and I'll tell you why. Because he was into talking to the ladies, and I figure, you know, I could be a good wingman or vice versa. So. Remember him trying to talk Harry Kim into dating twins or whatever on Voyager? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, let's see how that works out for you.
I did not expect that answer. I could be I'd be a good wingman.
Hey, here comes Janeway. Check it out.
Hey, Balana.
All right. And I'm going to go. Chuck. I'm going to go with Quark.
Okay.
Because I want to learn all those rules of acquisition. It'd be fun.
They made them up as they went. Come on.
No. He knows them all. He knows them all.
How many were there? 47?
I don't know. I just made up one that was 100 and something. So there's clearly that many now.
It's like the Constitution. It has some amendments on it.
Subparagraph C. So that means we have no winner. They all are
terrible winners? Roommates. Question mark.
We'll go co-ed and we'll all say Tilly instead. Let's face it. But anyway.
I'd be up for that.
All right.
FYI. There's 285 of them.
Okay.
So I had to look it up real quick.
110 or whatever one number I said, that's the one. You know, if there's a franchise, exploit it. All right, gentlemen, it's time to boldly go.
Rule of acquisition number 52, don't do a podcast for free. What?
We need to start a Patreon. We need to start a Patreon.
Right.
It's time to go boldly that away until next time.
Which way? Oh, that way.
If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic Is Trek, visit our Facebook page, or visit thetopicistrek.com. And be sure to check out the other mostly non-Trek related podcasts we work on, Technorama and Comedy Forecast. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic Is Trek, don't put on the red shirt.
Oh, man, I have one on and it says, just don't wear a red shirt.
Ooh.
You're screwed.
We need a store.